Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Legendary Deadwood Sheriff Seth Bullock is one of the Old West's most colorful characters. He was not only a lawman who brought order to the rowdy Black Hills town, but he was also a businessman and a conservationist whose friends included President Theodore Roosevelt. Singer, guitarist, and entertainer Gordy Pratt, something of a colorful character himself, portrays the ghost of Seth Bullock in his historical show, Seth Bullock, The Spirit of the West. You can see it during Wild Bill Days on Friday and Saturday at the Adams Museum in Deadwood, and then again from July 6th through the 21st. Gordy joins us from our studios at the Doyle Arts Center in Rapid City. Gordy, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Hey, Carl, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. You're doing well, too?
Absolutely. Never better. Finest frog's hair, as I say.
Right. Well, how long have you been doing the Seth Bullock show?
I wrote Seth, I think it was in 94, for Mary Schmidt, who renovated the Bullock Hotel. And it was kind of a commission from her. We did it in the basement of the Seth Cellar in the Bullock Hotel for many summers, along with a lot of other shows. And I was trying to add this up as I drove down from Spearfish. I think about somewhere between 500 and 550 shows. I've done it for school kids, conferences. Most of those numbers are doing three shows a day at the Adams Museum for the last 7 years for a 2.5-week period, which is great fun.
Do you find that audiences respond differently depending on who they are, whether it's the kids or the conferences or at the Adams Museum?
Absolutely. The most interesting to me are the folks that roll through the Adams Museum. They're from all over the world, and they love, you know, they came here to get a little piece of the West, and this is a lot of them say, geez, this is the best thing we've seen. This has really given us the feel, because it's kind of a living history presentation on the entertaining side. And, it's short, so that's good, too. They can make it to lunch, you know.
No.
And it's free.
It's free.
It's free and short.
Free,
what do you mean?
Free and short.
Right.
Well, we could just end the interview right here.
That's right.
It's free.
It is free, public radio. Sure, yeah. Well, it's not free. I pay my thingy, you know, by golly.
Well, as long as you're there, you have your guitar. One of the songs, can you share one of the songs from the show?
Sure. I expect you folks all drove into Deadwood on some of those fancy new highways that we have now. Well, that ought to give you some idea what it was like trying to get here in the 1870s. Now, Deadwood was 200 miles from the nearest railroad, and only way to get in here was in a wagon, on horseback, or you walked. We had an expression back in those days. The cowards never started. Though weak, they died on the trail. And the fools went on to Wyoming. Listen while I tell you the tale of Black Hills Gold. Turn back the clock, back to 1874. The Custer Expedition said there's gold here to be found. Come one, come all, your fortunes can be picked up off the ground. The times were tough, the drought was rough, the Great Depression roared. The Middle Western pioneers, well, they were mostly unemployed. The prospect of a gold rush gave them hope to cure their ills. They hugged the wife, kissed the kids, and headed for the hills. It was the gold rush of 76, Dakota was the cry. In 1876 we came, some stayed, some left, some died. Those were the days the West was wild, we mined with pans and picks. Deadwood made its mark in time in the days of 76. They came from Cincinnati, they came from Iowa. On horseback, in a wagon, some walked 40 miles a day. They had no right to be here, they had no official claim. But the lust for gold was in their hearts, and by the thousands here they came. Black Hills was the center of the great Sioux Nation's soul. The white men came like locusts, searching for the yellow gold. The blood and thunder raged on as they fought to save their land. Then Custer lost the bighorn. It became their final stand. It was the gold rush of 76. Dakota was the cry. In 1876 we came. Some stayed, some left, some died. Those were the days the West was wild. We mined with pans and picks. And Deadwood made its mark in time in the days of 76. From a narrow gulch there came a cry. A new strike had been found. Nuggets the size of a big man's fist were lying on the ground. 10,000 men came rushing in, their pockets for to fill. The gulch was choked with fallen trees, and they call it Deadwood still. Soon the fallen timber was cleared out and sawn for wood. Shacks went up like wildfire where the silent pine trees stood. The cry, "I've struck it rich," was echoed up and down the creek. Gold fever was contagious. It could make a strong man weak. It was the gold rush of 76. Dakota was the cry. In 1876 we came. Some stayed, some left, some died. Those were the days the West was wild. We mined with pans and picks. And Deadwood made its mark in time in the days of 76. Some got shot, some got rich. In the days of 76. In the days of 76. In the days of 76. That's pretty much how it happened, girl.
That's Gordy Pratt with music from his show, Seth Bullock, The Spirit of the West. And he's performing that at Wild Bill Days on Friday and Saturday at the Adams Museum in Deadwood. And then again from July 6th through the 21st, and that's two times during the day. Gordy, who was this guy, Seth Bullock?
Well, he was, one way to describe him, he was a booster. He loved the Black Hills, and he, you know, like a somebody at the Chamber of Commerce who has a real impact on kind of wrangling people around to get them to go in a certain direction. He was one of the big influences in trying to make a very lawless gold camp into a community where, you know, regular women could come and live and have families and go to school and all that stuff. So, and he was an entrepreneur. He was really the first hardware Hank. He had several hardware stores around the hills, and Hardware Seth, I guess. Had a little ranch. Started a little ranch out by the 1880s. Things kind of slowed down around Deadwood, and I started a little ranch up north. Raised horses and cattle. Eventually laid out the little town of Belle Fouche. It was there I was to meet a man who'd have a tremendous amount of influence on me and, well, on the entire country. I was out on the range looking for strays one day, and I came across what appeared to me to be a couple of suspicious-looking tin-horn gamblers or cattle rustlers. Well, little did I know, I was about to meet a gentleman by the name of Theodore Roosevelt. And they became very good friends, conservation being a big part of that relationship, wonderful relationship between two guys who just like to make stuff happen, and the West. They both loved the West. Of course, Roosevelt was just in and out, but it made an impact on him. Never left him. And they were such good friends that Roosevelt sent his kids out on the train to Seth. I'd take him up into the hills and do him a little hunting and fishing, take him out on the ranch, do a little roping and riding. They were good boys. I was a pleasure to do it.
How do you are you trying to capture who Seth Bullock was, or just use him as a character, as a vehicle to really tell the story of Deadwood and the days of 76 and the Wild West?
It's been a long time. It's been 17 years I've been working on this guy, and he does kind of inhabit me at this point in a wonderful way, and I kind of turn him loose. And it's really what I try to do with the script is view Deadwood and the West through his eyes, interpret it through you know, the kind of guy that he was. And there's a little bit about Wild Bill. There's a little bit about Calamity Jane, Pocoralis, the famous folks. And then some more just kind of, what would you say, environmental things. You know, mm-hmm. what he saw and smelled, I arrived in Deadwood the summer of 1876. That little main street was jammed with bull trains and wagons and horses. Fellow had to watch where he stepped. The mud was thick and deep, among other things. And the sour smell of watered-down whiskey and cheap perfume mixed with the pungent odor of road apples and mud to create the unmistakable stench of a gold camp. And believe you me, it was stinky. Whew, Lordy.
I believe you. And you mentioned these names, Calamity Jane, and even the name Seth Bullock. You know, that's like the perfect Old West name. I mean, would we be still talking about these people if they had other names, if Seth Bullock was Bob Johnson or something like that?
Yeah, or Gordy Pratt. I'm sure. It's just a dumb name, you know.
It's a beautiful name.
Well, Bullock has
certain connotations.
Yeah, and there's still Bullocks around, obviously, English. I don't know. I never thought about that, Carl. You always ask me questions that I just have absolutely no answer for, but I'll think about it for the next couple of days.
Okay, think about it. And then you can email me your answer.
I will.
The ghost of Seth Bullock, you said he inhabits you. Is this just when you're doing the show, or is this something that you have this possession 24 hours a day?
No, and you know, it was this big ghost thing. I worked in the basement of the Bullock Hotel. Mm-hmm. I think we did a couple thousand performances down there, various little programs, and I never got a wiggle. You know, I never got a tingle of the ghost of Seth Bullock. But I talked to many, many people who were in the same place I was at the same time, and I tell you, the stories make the hair stand up on the back of your neck. So, no, he pretty much leaves me alone, which is good.
You mentioned doing this show thousands, hundreds of times. It still stays fresh with you?
You know, when you're in this business and you make a living at it, you're just grateful for any work you get. And, yeah, it rarely gets – I rarely get tired of it. When I started at the museum, it was a tremendous opportunity as a writer because I did three shows a day, and I could – say, all right, I'm going to change these two words around in this line and see how that goes. And I do that for a couple shows. And I see that throughout that really didn't work, so I'll put it back. You know, that kind of tuning, and obviously audiences are different and all of that, but it's I essentially workshopped this show performance after performance. And, you know, I find that really engaging. And always working on the guitar accompaniment, you know, to make it more full and actually, I just started taking voice lessons last September. I'm trying to learn how to sing. I don't know. I've always just sung so I could play the guitar. You know.
So now you're learning how to sing in addition to play the guitar.
It's wonderful.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left. I don't know if there's time for a short song or a segment of a song.
You bet.
Got like 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
You know, the wildest woman ever to come to Deadwood rode into town all our clothespins. She walked like a man, she talked like a man, she dressed like a man, and she drank like a fish. She looked like a half-busted bale of hay, walking down the street singing and hollering, "I'm a howling coyote from Bitter Creek, and the further up you go, the bitter it gets, and I'm from the head end. So give me a drink before I shoot your toes off." Her real name was Martha Jane Canary. We called her Calamity. She's a buckskin baby, don't you think you maybe ought to buy her a drink or two? She can tell you stories that'll make your bees buzz, and a couple of them ought to be true. Well, she can outrun, outshoot any man alive. She can scout like a snake through the brush. But she's a whip-cracking bullwhacker. She can cuss a blue streak, making ordinary man blush. She's Calamity Utterly. She's a Jim Dandy, not a lady. Everybody knows when she walks in the door. She's a howling coyote, set him up, Joe. She hit the floor dancing to the fiddler's tune. She won't stop till the next day noon. This rot gut saloon will never be the same. He's Calamity Jane. Yes, she is. Now, this is a true story, Carl. She was scouting for Custer one long hot summer, passing herself off as a man. One real hot day, they came up on a river. The boys took off their shirts and dove in. Well, it was so hot, she never thought. You know, I think she plumb forgot who she was supposed to be. Ripped off her shirt and jumped in with him. Lord, what a calamity. She's calamity, utterly. She's a Jim Dandy, not a lady. Everybody knows when he walks in the door, she's a howling coyote. Set him up, Joe. She hit the floor dancing to the fiddler's tune. She won't stop till the next day noon. This rot gut saloon will never be the same. East Calamity Jane. Ah, all right, ladies, give me a good old Calamity Jane howl. All of you out there in public radio land. Here we go. Ow! Woo! It's a beautiful thing.
Well, Gordy Pratt, thanks so much for joining us on Dakota Midday. Song about Calamity Jane there. And I hope you and Seth Bullock and everyone have a great summer.
I appreciate it. Come on out and visit us when you can, Carl.
That's Gordy Pratt portrays the ghost of Seth Bullock in his historical show, Seth Bullock, The Spirit of the West. And you could see that during Wild Bill Days this Friday and Saturday at the Adams Museum in Deadwood at 11:30 and 1:30 p.m. He also presents the show at the Adams Museum daily from July 6th. Through the 21st. And that's it for this edition of Dakota Midday. Thanks to all of our guests on today's show, Kevin Wooster, John Hunter, Larry Tai, and the ghost of Seth Bullock, Gordy Pratt. Stephen Zwemke produces Dakota Midday. We had assistance from Nathan Poole. Special thanks to Charles Michael Ray for helping us out from Rapid City. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with a musician who makes instruments that are not only for the ear, but also the eye. His instruments are featured in a new exhibit at the National Music Museum in Vermilion, Shapes of Sound. That's tomorrow at noon Central, 11 Mountain, right here on SDPB Radio. I'm Carl Gerke. Stay tuned. Talk of the Nation from NPR is coming up next.